Hi Josh, welcome to the five albums you'll hear in heaven. It's very good having you back on one of my podcasts.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
So I understand you're about to head off on tour, so I thought it might be worth talking about that a little bit before we get into your five albums. Where can people see you?
Yeah, we're really, really chuffed actually, because we've just signed to a music agency actually called Nearfield Artists, and they've been booking lots of dates for us, and there's lots more coming up as well. But so the ones that are coming up are Live Room Saltaire on the 18th of September, then Massham Town Hall on the 16th of October, and then The Slaughtered Lamb in London on the 30th of October.
Congratulations on signing up to an agency. So what does that mean for your music?
It means that we can really take things to the next level. So we've been working really, really hard, and we've got some great opportunities so far to date, just from, you know, hard work and grafting basically and networking like crazy. But they can open more doors for you, so hopefully bigger and better festival stages and just more tour dates. So it's a really exciting time for us, actually, quite a turning point.
Great stuff. So we'll move on to the main event now, the five albums you'll hear in heaven. So the first category is the tens. So this is an album that reminds you of your childhood. What have you chosen for this?
So I was a bit of a weirdo as a child, as I'm sure everyone feels like they are really, but I basically exclusively listened to Queen, and I think that started when we went round to my grandparents' house and my aunt was there. My aunt's very young, so she was quite a trendy aunt. She was about the same age as my older brother, and she was showing us the DVD of Queen's Greatest Hits. And I saw, I think it was Friends Will Be Friends or something, and in that music video they're on stage, and I just remember seeing it and thinking, that is an enormous audience and the music sounds amazing, they're all having such a good time, why would anyone ever want to do anything else? That is what I want to do when I'm older. So it was one of those moments, and I watched through that DVD and then immediately pestered my parents to buy me Queen CDs, and that's the only thing I would listen to from about age 7 to 12. So I think the album I will choose is A Night at the Opera, because that's the first one I got. Well, I got that one and News of the World, but there's something about A Night at the Opera that just does it all. It's such an audacious album. It kind of goes everywhere. It's so bold. It's got so many different styles in it, and it really grabs your attention from start to finish.
I'm going to do a playlist of some of the tracks from your albums as well. So which track would you pick? I normally say, which track do you think people should listen to? But I can't imagine there's not many people who haven't listened to Queen. Which track would you pick to sort of best characterise A Night at the Opera?
I think I'll go with the first track, Death on Two Legs, because it's just such a great opener. You just know what you're in for when you hear that track.
So let's move on to your teens now. So this is an album that defines your teens. What have you chosen for this?
There's a bit of a backstory before this one. So at some point I got over the fact that Queen were not the only band in the world and I should listen to other things, and that was mostly led by my big brother Ben and my dad as well. They were sort of suggesting bands, and my brother was really into Led Zeppelin, and in fact he asked my parents to buy him an electric guitar and he started playing, and he fancied himself as Jimmy Page and he needed a John Bonham to play the drums, so he said, you need to buy Josh and Tim a drum kit. He did, and I had to play the drums as he riffed away to Led Zeppelin stuff. And so I was kind of really into that sort of music throughout my teenage years. And then it was David Bowie, Pink Floyd, Wishbone Ash, Elton John, all those kinds of things. So I really got into the 70s. It was really hard to choose an album, to be honest, for this category. I was going to go with Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, because I listened to that album to death. But I thought it'd be more interesting, in the interests of this podcast, to find something a bit more unknown. So I don't suppose you've heard of a chap called Klaus Nomi at all?
Most people haven't. The name rings a bit of a bell, but if you asked me to hum any of his tunes, I couldn't.
No, well, you'd need to have a very high-pitched hum, because he's a countertenor from the late 70s, early 80s. He was a German chap, and he went over to New York and sang in these underground clubs, and no one really was singing countertenor in those days. If those people listening don't know what countertenor is, it's where you sing in the high-pitched register of your voice, or the falsetto voice, and then it would be accompanied by this weird sci-fi rock kind of sound, very odd, and kind of fused with 80s pop sounds. So it's very, very niche, and the costumes and the makeup that he wore were just extravagant. So Google Klaus Nomi and you're in for an absolute treat. I think what he showed me is that it's all right to be a bit of a freak. And when I was at sixth form, then because I was really obsessed with him. You know, we did Battle of the Bands and played a song of his called Total Eclipse. And then later, then there was like a showcase of students who are learning, who do music lessons at the school. And when we did A-level, we got a free music lesson every week. So I thought, well, I have to take this up. I didn't fancy carrying on piano because I've fallen out with the instrument. So I decided on singing lessons. And because of Klaus Nomi, I decided I should do counter-tenor singing. So goodness knows what that poor singer must have thought when I was there squawking away. But anyway, I learned Dido's Lament from the end of Dido and Aeneas, this opera by Purcell. And at the showcase, then my poor music teacher sat behind the piano and played the music while I stood on stage and sang this countertenor aria. And during the rehearsal, I remember looking out and there's all these other children, like year 9s, 10s and 11s, ready to perform. And as I sang, one by one, they just started sniggering and laughing. And I thought, I'm dying a death up here. I'm singing in this ridiculous way. Anyway, so my confidence was a bit knocked. But then when it came to the actual performance, I did this bizarre performance, sort of holding myself upright like Klaus Nomi did. And then afterwards, someone came up to me and said, it takes some balls to do something like that. That was brilliant. Well done. And it was just one of those affirming moments. I thought I'd done that as a kind of tribute to Klaus Nomi, but it was a kind of a moment of, it's all right to be outrageous, to do something completely unexpected. And you might divide an audience. You might divide them so 90% of the people think you're weird or they hated what you did. But if one person goes away and it's changed their lives or they think that's incredible, it's worth it. So the album is Klaus Nomi. It's a self-titled album. And the song has to be Total Eclipse.
Okay, so we're going to move on to your 20s now. So this is an album that defines your 20s. So what have you chosen for this?
To be honest with you, this one was basically impossible to choose. So when I got to my 20s, then that rabbit warren kind of opened up even more and I started listening to music as you're supposed to, which is kind of like a web, isn't it? You sort of listen to one thing, you find related artists, you listen to that, you listen to the latest artist around that. So it kind of goes on and on and on. So, you know, I'm currently in my 20s still and it's still ongoing, but I just completely fell in love with all things 70s and particularly prog rock. So it's Yes, it's Rick Wakeman, Genesis, Kate Bush, Jethro Tull, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, King Crimson, Renaissance. You know, I could go on, like, and I tend to collect albums based on like entire discographies as well. So I genuinely got into the back catalogues of all these artists. And then I really got into folk music. So I've gone with a folk album because it really defined me musically. After being into rock music and prog music and other kinds of music around that type, when I discovered folk music, there was something else about that that really appealed to me, and it was a band called Steel Ice Band, who are not the coolest band in the world, but they kind of showed me that you can take one style and fuse it with a different style and make something absolutely incredible that unites those audiences, that might take something more obscure like folk music and turn it into something more accessible or something that has a bit more edge to it. But what I've gone with is something that has a memory attached to it. And Steel Ice Band came to York Barbican, so I went to see them. And they had a new album that was completely different to all their old stuff that I'd been listening to. It's called Wintersmith, and they did it in collaboration with Terry Pratchett. And the Dark Morris song from that album is just fantastic. And I think for a band that is kind of a bit old-fashioned in some ways, or it gets a reputation for being very, very 70s. I thought they really made an effort with that album to update their sound, and I think they nailed it.
Okay, so the next category is wildcard. So this is whatever you want to share with us.
So there were lots of wildcard options as well. I sat downstairs next to my record collection and I just looked through them all and thought, there's 100 albums I could choose for this. But the one I went for in the end was one that was recommended to me by a local chap called Oz Hardwick. Do you know Oz?
I do, yes.
A reviewer. Yeah. So Oz very kindly put my latest album in his Best of 2020 list in R2 magazine, or R&R magazine, as it's now called. So I was really, really, you know, chuffed by that. And one of the other two albums, well, the other three albums that he put alongside it was an album called Magic Brother Mystic Sister, which is by the band of the same name. And I think the name of the band is a reference to a gong song or something like that. Someone will correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah, they picked this psychedelic track to name their band, and it is super authentic psychedelic music. Like, it sounds like it's from the 60s, but it's incredibly well produced. it's just really dreamy, and there's like flutes and mellotrons and electric guitars, and it's really experimental. And they did this incredible music video, which looks like it was shot on an actual like 70s camera as well. So they've taken it to the extreme and made it super authentic. I think I'll choose the track Utopia, which is the first track off the album.
So that brings us to our last category, which is current. So this is the album you love most right now. And I realise this changes probably on a weekly basis, but what have you chosen for this?
Yeah, it changes almost hourly sometimes, depending on what you're listening to, doesn't it? I think this is really hard because these days, sadly, people don't listen to albums as much. So it's kind of flitting from song to song. So there's lots of new songs I've heard that I really like, but I haven't listened to the albums. So I've had to choose one that I do own the album to. So it's one that I've purchased on vinyl record. And it's Greta Van Fleet. Do you know Greta Van Fleet?
I'm afraid, no.
So they're kind of pretty big in the US and on the rock scene. They're known for being a bit of a Led Zeppelin ripoff band, but I think there is more to them than that. So their first few albums sound a bit too close to Led Zeppelin for comfort, even down to the singing. You know, it's really, really, I love it because we can't see Led Zeppelin, can we? Because they're not playing anymore. So I'm all for bands like this taking another band's sound that we don't get anymore. But their latest album, which is called Battle at Garden's Gate, sounds a bit different. They're sort of taking it in a different direction, so they're developing their own sound a bit more. The first track, Heat Above, is just something else. It's fantastic. It's got, you know, full rock sound. It's got Hammond organ in there as well, and anyone who's seen us live knows that I absolutely love the Hammond organ. It's a really good instrument, especially in a rock context, and they just absolutely nail it. And the other thing I really like about Greta Van Fleet is that there's like climate change undertones to it, and I only realised this the other week, but I think the band is named because of Greta Thunberg. I think they're called Greta Van Fleet, as in they are the army of Greta Thunberg. I might be wrong, but that's my interpretation of it anyway, which I think is a really cool idea for a band.
Well, Josh, thanks very much for coming on the Five Albums You'll Hear in Heaven. It's been really interesting learning about your autobiographical album picks.
Thanks very much. It's been an absolute pleasure having a chat, as always.